Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us on the line from Israel, Rolene Marks. Rolene, good morning. How are you this Good Friday?
Good morning. Mo'adim l'simcha to all who are celebrating Pesach for the last couple of days. And to our many, many, many Christian listeners, a very, very happy Good Friday to you. If you are observing, I wish you a very happy Easter.
Right. Is Easter a big thing in Israel? I mean, obviously it should be in many ways because of the historical significance.
Well, it is a very big thing in Israel. We do have quite a sizable Christian community. And in times when travel is allowed, we do have pilgrims from around the world who come to Jerusalem, who do the walking of the stations of the cross, who observe all the Easter traditions. And it's actually quite something to be in the old city around about this time, because we've had this week the Birkat Kohanim, the blessings of the high priests, the Kohanim. Absolutely magnificent to see just a sea of white palesim, the magnificent prayer, celebrating that incredible, incredible Jewish tradition. And then later on in the week, we have the Christian communities from around the world descending on the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, walking around the old city, doing their stations, really involved in an ancient tradition for them. So you really, really get a sense that Jerusalem is the meeting place of the three Abrahamic religions. And of course, anybody who's been to Jerusalem will hear the call of the Muezzin, the call to prayer on a Friday, coming from the mosques.
Yeah, I've actually done that walk and I found it incredibly moving. I went on a tour. I had a friend of mine who's an observant Christian, and I went along with him on a tour of the old city, and we walked down the Via Dolorosa and stopped along the way. I found it an incredible, incredibly moving experience. And I kept thinking that every observant Christian really needs to go and do that, because it really does give such a different sense of the religion. Let's move on to some of the big stories that happened this week. And one that seems to be, I think, changing the landscape of Israeli politics was the speech by Abbas Mansour. Can you tell us who he is, what is going on with this?
This was actually quite extraordinary, and many of us who are analysts watching it kind of felt that this is the speech that one would expect coming from the leader of a country. Now, everybody calm down. Don't throw your tomatoes at me yet. Let's put everything into perspective. And again, I just want to reiterate that this is always based on an analytical perspective and not any...
It sounds like you're anticipating some backlash before you even give your view. Rolene, don't be nervous. Go right ahead.
Jeez, you should spend some time in my WhatsApp, Howard, after some of these reports. Oh. But Abbas Mansour is the leader of the very conservative Islamist party, Ra'am. At the moment, he is the man they call Kingmaker, because his decision of where he aligns his party could make or break whether or not we have another prime ministership coming from Premier or Prime Minister Netanyahu, or if he goes with the change bloc, we could see that the coalition falls under Sa'ar, Lapid and Bennett to form in a government under that. So he addressed the nation as the second political party leader this week to do so. The first was the Prime Minister just a few nights ago, and he was widely criticized for using the national stage to kind of post election grandstand by saying, Sa'ar Bennett, you need to come home to the Likud. Whereas Ra'am leader Abbas Mansour, his speech was very, very conciliatory. You know, he said that, he doesn't believe in titles like kingmaker, that's not who he is. And he said this, and I'm going to read to you from his speech. He said, what we have in common is greater than what divides us. I am Mansour Abbas, a man of the Islamic movement. I am a proud Arab and Muslim, a citizen of the great state of Israel, who heads the leading biggest political movement in Arab society. Courageously champion a vision of peace, mutual security, partnership and tolerance between the peoples. I reach out a hand in my name and that of my colleagues and on behalf of the public that voted for me to create an opportunity for coexistence in this holy land blessed by three religions and of two peoples, and that his party respects every person, whoever they are, sanctifies life and abhors all violence against anybody based on political, national or religious reasons. The time has come for us to listen to each other, to respect each other's narrative and to respect the other. We don't have to agree on everything. We will obviously differ on many issues, but we must give ourselves and our children the right and the opportunity to come to know our neighbors. Every one of us has a name, a culture, a story, experiences, and a narrative. If we cannot find the way to defeat ignorance and beat racism, we will bequeath the next generation a complex, dangerous and impossible reality. And he was very, very careful, Howard, not to align himself with any of the blocs. But he does echo the words of President Rivlin, who has had to put together, I think it's the fifth administration in his seven-year term. No, actually, it's the seventh administration in his fifth-year term. I have, you know, Hebrew Howard, right to left, which is just unbelievable. No president, I think, has had to do that. But
incredibly, incredibly powerful words, and so, I mean, certainly they resonate with me. What do we know about him?
We don't know all that much about him. You know, he's largely a quiet man. He's very concerned with issues facing his own community. He's very, very, very conservative. His party is an Islamist party, but it's not necessarily a politically Islamist party. And we have to make the distinction.
I wanted to ask that because whenever you see a description that says it's an Islamist party. Now, in some ways, that's got a negative connotation because, it's purely our lack of understanding, I assume. So can you just explain that?
Well, I think we have to make the difference between radical Islam, which is one thing altogether, and an Islamist party that sees itself based on the teachings of the Quran. And quite ironically, we've had members of the Haredi faction say they would rather sit in a coalition with Ra'am than they would with more left-leaning parties, which kind of explains.
Well, it makes sense. That does make sense to me, because if he is an Islamist party, it's steeped in religion, as is the Haredi party. So there's a respect for religion. I guess what the Haredi parties are saying, well, with a far left, when there isn't an adherence or a respect for religious observance, it's much harder to actually get onto the same page.
Well, this is it exactly. And I think that, you know, we, and you and I have this discussion so often that context and nuance is often lost in the narrative or what people have to say. We have to look at things sometimes from a bigger perspective, a more analytical perspective. And what's also very important to note is that he referred to himself as an Israeli and the great state of Israel. You know, there was nothing that was seen as divisive or what we have come to understand as nationalistic from an Arab perspective. He's very much sees himself as the leader of Arabs in this country and wants to work towards somewhere where we meet in the middle, even though we might disagree, that we can find common ground. And he very much wants to push forward issues in his own community, which is what he's elected to do. He's elected to deal with infrastructure, with issues of violence in his community, and whatever issues he feels are important there. This is an opportunity where one could say the joint list have really, really lost out, because this could have been then this could have been the leaders of the joint list taking this kind of stepping in, instead of that a radical, divisive kind of rhetoric. It really, really is a landmark speech, winning him the respect of many Israelis for this very, very measured way. And he's actually strategically, or maybe unwittingly, you know, we don't know what's his thought process is. He's almost done the anti-Netanyahu, who just a night before came on and basically tried to strongman Sa'ar and Bennett, saying, you know, stop sitting with Lapid, stop talking to all these other factions. You know where you belong. You belong in the right. And the right is seen as a very, very divisive place right now, not just in Israel, but also Israel in the international stage. And there are elements within that bloc, and here we talk about people like Bezalel Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, who are seen as hugely, hugely contentious, two characters that could impact our normalization deals, because our Gulf partners now are very concerned with people like Ben-Gvir, who is a sworn Kahanist. He is seen to be racist. He is seen to be anti-LGBTQ. And we even have somebody there who says they want to downplay gender equality, which doesn't sit very well with me, Howard.
Right, or any other thinking person, I imagine.
Exactly. And so we're very concerned with these kind of elements possibly coming, or they will be in our next government.
So what is likely to happen now? I mean, is there a sense? How many seats does he hold?
He holds about 7 seats at the moment. I could be wrong, it's 7 or 8 right. seats. But he's definitely the man, along with Bennett, who could see as determining where we go from here. Bennett this weekend will be meeting with Lapid and Netanyahu. Interesting, he's meeting with Netanyahu first before he meets with Lapid. I mean, guys, don't let, you know, Shabbat or Pesach be any distraction. But they will be meeting this week to see if we can break the deadlock. And the president, who really doesn't have much political power when it comes to this, his only power right now is to tap whoever with the mandate of forming the government. He's faced a lot of criticism from Likud MKs because who've actually been quite aggressive against the president, who is a former Likudnik, because the president has said he's not necessarily going to tap the candidate with the most MKs, but he's going to tap the candidate who has better odds of forming a coalition, right. Because we really need to
he's
get
been
that
there.
Government.
I mean, he's done this 4 times, or you said many more than that, but even in the last short while, he's done this 4 times, tapping the one with the most number of seats, and it just doesn't seem to work. Taking a look at some of the messages, Rene says his speech could have been written by the Biden administration, saying Ra'am wants Jerusalem, and then Ivy saying Shalom, Howard and Ralin. He sounds very sensible, which more politicians should be. So, of course, as we expect, very different views on this. It's never going to be simple. But the fact that he could stand up very, very publicly and say those things, I think, has significant value. Can we please talk about phone calls?
Let's talk about phone calls. But before we talk about phone calls, I just want to touch on issues. We have to be very careful to make comments about this administration or that administration interfering in our domestic politics. We have to be very, very careful because it's heading into dangerous territory. But while we're speaking about other administrations, let's talk for rebels with phone calls again, Howard.
This phone call business, maybe, so just tell us about it.
Well, Mahmoud Abbas, he's the president of the Palestinian Authority, is said to have been very, very furibled that Joe Biden, the president of the United States, has not called him. He has apparently spoken to the Prime Minister Netanyahu several times since taking office. And the first call that was put through to Abbas was by Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who I happen to think is a very, very dignified man. You can see he's very measured, very rational in how he approaches things. And Abbas has said, no, this is not protocol, that the first phone call should be from the elected leader who takes office and not from the Secretary of State. That is absolutely unacceptable, and promptly refused to take his call.
Wow. Wow. So now? Maybe Biden thinks he's called him. You know, he forgets stuff.
That is quite possible. But now, of course, U.S. officials are trying to plan a possible phone call between maybe Blinken and the Prime Minister, Mohabit Shtaye, or a senior PA official. Note, it hasn't been said that they're trying to plan a phone call between Biden and
that's very interesting. Very, very interesting. Wow.
I mean, those without official states should possibly not try and sanction the President of the United States, who actually is trying to look at ways to ensure that you do get some kind of funding. Just saying, Howard.
Absolutely right. Unfortunately, just like that, it is 8 o'clock. Rolene Marks, thank you as always. We'll catch you next week. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. A Shabbat Shalom and a Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach, everybody. And same time next week.